Shake for a shake. I'm throwing these Emirates in the sky. Spinning this awesome llama. Make them piece the M-O-N-E-Y. I love my beaches.
Hi, welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Get a hold of me on Twitter, at Ryan Ballingy. And you can follow Golf News Net every which way on the handle Golf News Net. We're presented by BetDSI.com, and we use their odds each and every week on all of our tours' odds posts. And we love using them because we get a great sense of where the money's moving, and how that money movement affects the odds in real time. So even if you're in a place where you can't bet legally on sports online, you can still use that information to help inform your daily fantasy golf and your fantasy golf choices each and every week. So check out BetDSI.com. Okay, so this is the second of two that we'll release, at least, podcasts that we have in terms of interviews with players from the Players' Championship. So as we explained in the Tyrone Van Aswegen podcast, this is kind of a product of what happens on Wednesdays at the Players. So dating back to 2012, maybe it was 2011, but I think 2012, the PGA Tour staff put together kind of a first-timers Players news conference opportunity where they got all of the first-time Players participants in a spot, and they kind of just let the media go at them in a couple different waves, kind of go around from chair to chair. So the players sit, the media moves around and find them. Talk to them, ask them questions, get to know them a little bit, give them a chance for some free earned media that maybe they wouldn't otherwise get because they're a first-time player. And they have it now. They originally had it in the interview room in the media center at TPC Sawgrass. Now they have it outside the clubhouse. And the tour, as part of our kind of blog cabin thing with them, was kind enough to put us with Golf News Net in the permanent scoring building in the nine scoring, and record some interviews with different players. So we did three. We're going to air two. And you can listen to the post-players podcast to understand why we're only doing two. But the second one, after Tyrone Van Aswegen, was Brett Stegmaier. And Brett Stegmaier nearly won in Las Vegas a couple seasons ago, basically right out of the gate after getting his PGA Tour card through the Web.com Tour Finals. And this year he's kind of mired in a slump. And he's trying to work his way through it, trying to find his game again. And we talk about that a little bit. We talk about Sawgrass to some extent. But the most fascinating part of the conversation, for me at least, was his view on how guys who came through kind of the same system as he did, the Web.com Tour and the Web.com Tour Finals, how they make a livelihood, how they make a schedule, how they get into events, how they deal with the reshuffle, how they deal with guys who have status who seemingly should not but still do, and all of those things. And maybe how to improve how the perception is, and I agree with him, that too many players on the PGA Tour have status of some kind that gets them into tournaments. And instead of doing that, limiting the number of players who have status and making sure that those players are the ones who are the best currently speaking, and those are the ones that get priority to get into tournaments. So really interesting conversation, and we'll let Brett kind of take the lead here.
All right, so what's this experience been like so far?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I remember coming here in college and thinking how cool it would be to play here, and that was 12 years ago, so it took me a while to get here, but yeah, it should be fun. I mean, it's definitely, I feel like all tour events kind of blend together, but this has a little different feel to it. Playing for more money, more status, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Cool golf course, so yeah, it should be fun.
What do you think about the changes to the golf course? I mean, obviously, as the first Players, but
yeah,
someone who's seen the golf course over the years, obviously,
I probably played 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
Outside of 12, nothing really stands out. I think they changed a few greens, but
yeah,
12 is vastly different.
Like it, don't like it?
I think it's a little severe. It's probably going to make more guys lay up than go for it, just because you can hit a drive to the middle of the green and you can roll in the water.
Yeah.
I was watching Golf Channel last night, and I saw a guy hit the middle of the green, went in the water. Perfect drive.
What?
I mean, I think it landed short and kicked hard left.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Like, I mean, perfect line and then in the water.
Yeah, I mean, you almost have to fade it into the hill and get a good bounce.
But, yeah.
I'd probably go for it for the back left pin and just let it to the other one. So, It'll make guys think, though, for sure. That's obviously what they wanted. Because the old hole, he just hit 400.
Right, it's just layup wedge. Yeah.
So.
Do you think it'll be like a situation where, like, you got to be on a tight spot either on the cut line or maybe you're chasing the lead or something? Like, that's really the spot where you're going to go for it otherwise.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, the fact that it's not one of the last three holes, I think it'll, you know, if you're two back with seven to go, I mean, I don't think you're really going to, you know, push the envelope.
There's enough there the rest of the way that you can get
those shots. Yeah, but certainly, I mean, there's going to be eagles. There's going to be, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of doubles because you can just drop right up by the green.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to make bogey.
Right, that's your worst score, right?
Yeah, so just that being the case, I think more guys will probably go for it just based on that because there's not a lot of penalty.
Yeah. So. Do you think it flows better with the rest of the back nine now? Kind of gives you one extra chance at scoring? I mean, they seem to set that up pretty well before you get to like 14 and 15 where it's kind of
hard. Yeah, 14, 15 obviously are hard to get one. I mean, the way it was before, it was just kind of a nothing hole. So.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it fits well on a Pete Dye golf course. Pete Dye makes you think. And that's, I mean, a lot of his hazards aren't really in play, but they look like they're in play. And,
right.
A hole like that, you know, it's right in front of you, and you know the penalties and advantages of hitting drivers. So.
Do you think that 12 kind of fits in with the Dye spirit of this golf course?
I think so. And I think he said he didn't really like drivable par fours. So
yeah.
I'm not really sure if he likes it all that much, but... You know, the way golf is now with, you know, action and, you know, the younger generation liking stuff like that.
Yeah.
It seems like every good golf course has a drivable par four, so it seems only natural to have one here.
Have one here.
Yeah.
Are you an architecture guy? I mean, it sounds like...
Not really. I mean, I enjoy holes like that because it makes you think, like... I mean, you can play it stress-free and hit a 4-iron lob wedge, but there's always that carrot in front of you enticing you to pull a driver. And, you know, you're not going to make two very often, but, it's hard to stand on the tee and the fans are kind of goading you.
And
you pull out a 4-iron, you kind of feel like a...
And they might boo you.
Feel like a wuss, but, I mean, hopefully I'm strong enough to not be affected by that, so...
But, like, how often does that happen? Like, you're... Whether the fans goad you or not, like, you stand on the tee, like, this is what I was going to do all week, this is what I plan to do, and they go, screw it, I'm going to do a different thing. How often does that happen?
I mean, well, I said to my caddy, like, game time decision, being like, okay, I'm just going to hit 4-iron here every day. Like, you don't know what situation you're going to be in. If it's my 12th hole on Friday and I need, you know, I'm two off the cut and I, you know, got to make something happen.
Yeah.
You're going to think differently than if it's Sunday and you got a 3-shot lead, you're not going to hit driver there. So,
right.
It's just situation-based.
And that... Is that how you generally approach every course in the PGA Tour? It's situational. It's not, this is discipline. I'm going to do this every time, no matter what.
I feel like I just go with my gut.
Yeah.
You get up there on Tuesday and you're going to hit driver, obviously.
Right.
And I hit it in the water on yesterday. So it's probably not a great image to have. But, I mean, it'll be my third hole on Thursday. So
so you're just getting into the round. So, I mean, like,
you don't
really want to take that
one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just kind of. Feel it out. Go with your gut.
Have you talked to any of your peers who have kind of been around this course a bunch of times for any inside info, or is it pretty much in front? I mean, Dye's courses, like you said, they're in front of you. That might be visually intimidating, but they're in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just look at the winners here, and there's no, I mean, big time players have won, but I mean, I think Tiger won twice, but there's no guys winning 2 years in a row or stuff like that. So it really favors nobody. It takes the bombers kind of out of play, but kind of neutralizes that aspect of the game, which is good for somebody like me because I'm average length and I don't feel like I have to overpower it. I drive it straight, so I can hit driver pretty much everywhere if I want to. I think Rory has a 1-iron in his bag this week, I saw.
Yeah, I saw that.
So that kind of takes, you know, definitely doesn't take him out of play because there's more to his game than just driving. And certainly Dustin has it all, but I think I saw he's never finished better than 25th here or something, which is surprising. So, I mean, everybody's in play, really. If you look at, I mean, Craig Perks won here. Matt Kuchar won, who hits it short.
Yeah.
Tiger won twice. So.
Fred Funk,
yeah. There's really no player really favors, which I think is good. So
that makes it kind of a weird course, though, because, I mean, you go to the Masters, Augusta National, you go there enough times, it's going to favor you because you just know the bounces. But even if you know the bounces here, you could still play terribly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's weird, right? I mean, there aren't a whole lot of courses that are like that.
Yeah, just, I mean, I'm not sure if that's good or bad. Like, Augusta is great because you know who's going to be in the mix. Here, yeah. It's kind of like, you know, if you're picking favorites, you're not really sure who to pick. Like, you know the top guys are going to be there, but,
yeah.
I don't think anybody would pick Kevin Kisner to be in the mix, or I think David Ligmarth owns one of the years after one. So, like, yeah, I think, for me, being a, you know, average length, I feel like every part of my game is solid, but nothing really stands out. So, like, if I go to Augusta, I feel like I have to make everything or do something great, whereas here it's just, you know, keep it in play, play solid, you know, don't have to be outstanding at really one part of the game.
Does that make you feel better about playing here?
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's just, if you have a great week, you're going to win. It doesn't matter whether you're long, short, whatever.
Right. Like, style. If I go to Torrey Pines, I feel like I got to putt great because I'm not long enough to really get short irons in my hands to hit it close. Whereas here, like, length isn't a big deal.
Yeah.
You have to drive it good. You have to drive it straight, which is probably my strength. So,
you feel like you got an advantage standing on the, tenth tee on Thursday.
Because I can hit driver everywhere, I feel like.
Yeah.
Whereas guys might have to scale back. The longer guys might have to scale back. So.
Is there... How many drivers will you hit? Are you going to...
I think I hit it on pretty much every hole.
Okay.
Even
18?
I hit 318. I had like 200 in, so I told my caddy I'd probably hit driver. But I know it firms up here as the week goes on.
So. Yeah, so by the end of the week, you might be able to hit three wins, still have 170 in or something.
Yeah, you can hit... You don't need a driver here, but I feel like I hit my driver straighter than my three would, so I'm going to hit it most.
You're going to go for it.
Yeah.
Kind of over the course of figuring out, all right, keeping card, building schedule, like what was kind of like the punch list like for you of, all right, what here, obviously goal is staying on tour, but then the next goal is, all right, now how do I build a schedule, right? I mean, how do you kind of set that up year one versus year two?
Yeah, last year was interesting because I really had no expectations. I got off to a great start in the fall.
Right with Vegas.
Yeah, almost won Vegas. So my card was, it wasn't locked up.
Yeah.
But I felt comfortable.
You're pretty close, yeah.
Whereas this year, I've had a pretty rough year. Played okay in the fall, but this calendar year has been pretty rough. So I've been able to build my schedule because I'm pretty much in everywhere except I won't get in. The Invitational's coming up, but... Yeah, I mean, I've had more expectations this year and haven't, you get off to a bad start, you start tinkering and doubting, and so hopefully I'm kind of past that and can start building something here. But I mean, it's certainly easier the second time around, having seen the courses and.
Yeah.
But still, it's all about execution. It's 90% execution, 10% experience, I think. So.
Like you said. You kind of came in with low expectations, not seeing the places. Mm-hmm. So, was it easier year one in a sense? Because you just like, hey, I don't know anything about any of these places, so I can just kind of freewheel it a little bit.
Yeah, I've always played better with low expectations. And that's hard to do. Like, I keep my card my first year.
Yeah.
Almost won, had another couple top tens.
Yeah.
So you're going to go into the next year feeling like, okay, I can... be top 70 or I can win a tournament, but then miss a few cuts, start doubting, and almost every guy's gone through that out here. Countless examples of guys who look around for things to change when there's nothing to change and go into that rabbit hole, and it's hard to get out, but I feel like I'm starting to come out of it and hopefully can start something this week. So.
Like, what did you start tinkering with? Did you start tinkering, or you're...
Go back to swing thoughts from the past, different chipping techniques, and, I just get bored and start...
messing
trying
around.
Different stuff, and my coach is great with keeping me in line, but he's not with me all the time, so it's just so easy for me to tinker, and...
Where do you first think about tinkering? Like, is it short game? Is it you're a good driver? So that's mess with that probably.
Not too much. Yeah, it's mostly chipping.
Yeah.
I had a really rough stretch chipping early this year. I feel like I've come out of that. And just I mean, the way they tuck pins out here in the firmness of the greens.
Yeah.
You got to have a pretty strong short game, and you start doubting that. And it's like, I don't want to say I had the chipping yips, but it was something pretty close to it.
Yeah.
And that just seeps into everything where you feel like, okay, I can't miss this green or else I'm going to make bogey.
You're going to make bogey.
So, yeah, it's just, I mean, it's some pretty strong adversity I faced, but I feel like I'm coming out of it. And still got a lot of tournaments left, so hopefully I can, like I said, start this week and be off and running.
Do you kind of eye towards the rest of the schedule like, all right, I felt good about playing here last year, or I had a good result here last year? Like, what are those kind of maybe handful of tournaments you're like, all right, these are the ones where I think I can really make hay?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like a countdown. All right, I still have 12 events left. All right, I still have 11 events left. Still got 10 events left. But I feel like I've always played good in the summer, I feel like, when it starts heating up. And like, I'll go back to Travelers, which haven't fared well there, but I'm from up there, and that's always nice to go back to.
Yeah.
Hopefully get in the U.S. Open. And, hopefully play good this week because it's big money and a little more points. So could make a big dent in that. But, yeah, I mean, I played good at Memphis last year. I played good at Greensboro. So going back to those places should be nice.
How do you feel about the changes to the way they distribute the FedEx Cup points this year? Because basically if you finish worse than 15th, it just falls right off the edge.
Yeah, I think it's good because it's basically the same as the money list.
Yeah.
I think I finished 93rd in money last year, but 108 in points.
Okay.
Because I had like six top 25s, but a bunch of weeks where I was like 60th, where you got like 1 point.
Right, yeah.
And if you finish, I think last year if you finished, you could almost finish 30th every week and keep recording points, but you'd get killed in money.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that they kind of merged those two together now is good. I think it'll take fewer points to keep your card.
Yeah.
Probably something around 400 versus 500. So,
is it
rewards better play versus mediocre play.
Yeah. Is it kind of weird now that, like, the points for, like, if, say, you finish 50th or 60th, are, like, nil. Like, you get nothing. At the end of the week, you had a pretty good week, made money, and then, you get 1 point.
I think you get more this year. You get fewer for, like, 30th, but you get more for 60th. I think I got one for 60th last year, but it might be, like, four or five now.
Yeah, there's, like, a sweet spot from, like, 62nd down where it's, like, you actually get more for some reason.
Yeah, I think I had a stretch last year where I finished, like, 60th to 70th 4 weeks in a row, and it made, like, 4 points. I was, like, I mean, you make, like, 60 grand, which is nothing to sneeze at.
Right.
I mean, relative to the field, it's not good, but in
still money.
Real life,
it's still like, good it's money.
Pretty awesome. But yeah, like, I made four cuts in a row and made 4 points. It's just like, I could have just stayed home, busted. But now I think you'd get like 15 or something. So
it's a little bit better looking at the sheet for the week.
Like, yeah, I never understood why the money list and the points were different.
Yeah.
Because I think there were five guys that kept their card in money.
Right.
But didn't make the FedEx playoffs. So.
Yeah.
And then that just kind of screws the web guys. That knocks five web.com guys out of the priority list.
Right.
Which then kind of screws the web.com tour. It's just a trickle-down effect where there's too many guys that have status, basically.
Right. I mean, you got, 225 guys that basically have some form of status.
Yeah.
And you have at most 156 in a week. So,
right.
I mean, not everyone wants to play every week, obviously, but...
Yeah.
How... Like, being a web guy to come to the PGA Tour, it's like, you got some good starts out of the gate, obviously, but, like, for a guy that finished 46th, 47th out of, like, the 50 guys between the...
Yeah. I was talking to Sebastian Munoz.
Yeah.
He topped 25 on the web last year, and he's gotten, like, 8 starts this year. I think he played, like, 3 times in 3 months or something. And that just, like, if you top 25 on the web, you should be a full PGA Tour member.
Should get at least 20 starts, no problem.
Yeah. And he might get, I don't know, 15, 16 starts. And that's so hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I was lucky because I played good early and got in pretty much everywhere I wanted.
Right, you were
to.
The reshuffle. You were set by Vegas. Yeah.
And I played good in the finals. I didn't even top 25 on the money list. So, I mean, it almost seemed unfair. It's just all about playing well at the right time, taking advantage of your opportunities. But, yeah, I mean, there's just so many good players and not enough places to play, so... It's just the nature of the game now, unfortunately.
So is there kind of, I mean, what's the fix? Is it give less guys status? Is it...
Yeah, I mean, the tour definitely caters to the veteran guy out here.
Right.
Which, for those guys, it's awesome.
Yeah.
But I feel like it should be more about the best players playing every week. no other sport says, oh, you've been around so long, like, you can keep your spot.
Yeah.
It's all about, like, if MLB teams aren't saying, hell, you know, you've been a veteran player for 15 years, you know, you can stick around. They're going to take the best player. Like,
right.
Which, like, I have a lot of opinions about sponsor exemptions and all that kind of stuff where the sponsor can do what they want, but at right. the end of the day, you should have the best 144, 156 every week.
Yeah.
Like the thing that LPGA did with the Twitter poll, like, I think it's just absurd.
Yeah.
And I don't think that would ever happen in men's golf.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, but it's just the nature of the world and social media, and certain guys are more popular, not based on their ability, but based on their social media status.
Yeah, so, or how long they've been around, or...
Yeah, so it's, I don't know, it's not ever going to change, but just the way it is.
I mean, would even something as simple as having, like, an 8-spot instead of a 4-spot on Monday, would that...
Or just, I mean, having the Monday be for guys who have
Twitter who have status.
Yeah. Which, it takes away the Cinderella story, but how many Monday qualifiers win or even, you know, top 25 make the cut?
Yeah, not...
You should reward guys who actually went through the web and actually got a tour card.
Yeah.
And they're sitting at home every other week, it seems like, so...
Sorry to interrupt. Brett, Jay.
How are you?
Great to see you.
Good to see you.
These are cufflinks commemorating your first players.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
There they are. Proud of you.
Nice.
That was a super week. You've been around?
Yeah.
Around the course a couple times?
Yeah, I played yesterday. So.
They found it.
It's awesome. There's not a divot out there. So, yeah.
Have a great week.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Anything we can do for you?
All set.
All right. Sorry to interrupt.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, there's just not enough. Playing
there's not enough.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean...
But, like, how would you feel if, like, you know, if they do the schedule change where they cut off the season and, mm-hmm. you know, Labor Day and then build in some kind of break? I assume that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
Where they take away more playing opportunities for you guys.
I think they just added another opposite field event during the match play, I think.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, Punta Cana, or turn the web.com tour event there into a PGA Tour event, right?
Right, which it's great that they add playing opportunities, but I think adding smaller events like that kind of devalues the PGA Tour win. Like, I think a season where you have 35 events where all the best players are playing, you know, 20 times or 25 times versus, okay, there's 47 events and 20 of them nobody's going to pay attention to because you can't play every week.
Or right.
You can't play 3 weeks in a row. So it's kind of it's a weird balance to where you got to give guys opportunities, but you don't want to, I mean, the tour's doing great, but you don't want to kind of devalue the brand where it's just oversaturation and you're playing, you know, 9 out of 12 months. But
so you'd rather have a tour where it's like 35 events, more merit-based.
Yeah, I mean, as a fan, for sure.
Yeah.
But as a player, like, yeah, I mean, I want to have all the opportunities I can get. But
right.
If I'm Joe Schmo sitting at home, like, I'd want it to be more like NASCAR, where every driver's driving every week.
Yeah.
There's not guys taking weeks off.
Right.
I think it's great from, like, April to August, where you basically have 5 or 6 big events all in a row.
Yeah.
But nobody's really watching... Nobody's watching Vegas or Napa or Mayakoba.
All right, the ratings aren't good for those places.
Yeah,
but
as a player, it's awesome. So
yeah,
it's, you know, I kind of fall in the middle. Like, I want to play and play for $1 million every week.
But, yeah.
Yeah, if you're just a fan, I don't think it's really that great.
Do you think if they shorten the season, would you want to see more Oppo events, like against a WGC or?
I think you'd have to. I was thinking, why not make the opposite field event 70 players no cut, just like the WGC?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think Barbasol the first year, they couldn't even fill the field.
Right, yeah. They had to go like 10 deep on...
Yeah, and they're calling up like a guy like Willie Wood.
Yeah.
He still has status somehow, but, you know, he's playing the senior tour now. And
yeah, like, please come play.
No disrespect to those guys, but it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of weird when you're filling the field with guys who played 10 years ago. So.
Right.
So why not make it a no cut?
Same thing as the the format of whatever that tournament, your Oppo, right?
Right.
That sounds interesting.
And it'll never happen.
No. No chance. None at all.
I feel like I have great ideas that'll just never happen. But maybe I'll be commissioner someday and I can...
But he was right here. You could have been like, hey, yeah.
I'd freeze up and, you know...
I need some more Oppo events and I need... more aggressive points. I need less guys to have status.
Right.
What can you do about that, Jay? Yeah,
that's a great idea, Brett. See you later.
All right, have a great player. We'll see. I don't want to take up any more of your time, but thanks for coming.
You got
thanks for talking, man. I appreciate it. Best of luck this week.
Thank you.
Thanks to Brett Stegmaier again for being on the show. I really enjoyed speaking with him. He did not make the cut of the Players' Championship, but his insight was awesome and hopefully kind of made you a fan of his. He was a little shy at first, but then he kind of came out of his shell and was awesome. I really enjoyed talking to him. So best of luck to him for the rest of the season, and thanks to the PGA Tour for setting that up and for the incredible experience that we had as well as others had at the Players' Championship last week. So that's the last of our Players' podcasts. If you'll notice, we did six, for Players' Week. We did one leading into it with odds. We did five GNN Live episodes. And we would love your feedback on GNN Live. We've done it for a little over a year now, and we do it in big tournaments. And we're kind of winding down GNN Radio, the stream service that we've had for almost 3 years now. And we're going to go to only on-demand, only recorded stuff that you'll be able to access for podcasts. So we want to hear from you. And we still want to continue to do podcasts after the fact of big tournament rounds, but we'd always kind of couch GNN Live as for GNN Radio as kind of a show that sounds like professional radio, acts like professional radio, because we have a professional radio host in TJ Reeves. And I've thought about moving toward a format that's more conversational, kind of like this, or kind of like when we talk with Brett or other people, and more reactionary, kind of back and forth. So I wanted to hear your thoughts on that. If you can, shoot me a note at Ryan Ballingy on Twitter or ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Doesn't have to be long, but whatever you have to say to inform us about those episodes, as we put on this stream, this subscription for the 19th Hole Golf Show. I would love to hear your thoughts on it if you listened to the shows over the last week or so. All right, so that's going to do it for us, for the Players. Next week, we will be back with new episodes, hopefully a guest. We'll certainly talk about the Nelson and some other things coming up in the world of golf, including the BMW PGA Championship over in the European Tour, their flagship event. All right, until next time, I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thanks so much for listening to our show, and we'll catch you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.